هذا الإعلان يستمع إليه الآن زبائنك الجدد. ماذا ستخبرهم عن مصلحتك التجارية إذا استطعت؟ SBS الإذاعة الأسترالية الأكثر ثقة في بث لغات متعددة. مستمعين على تواصل دائم معنا، يشاركون بشكل كبير وساهموا في دعم عدد لا يحصى من الشركات والمصالح التجارية المحلية، لتكن مصلحتك التجارية هي المقبلة. نحن نقدم صفقات إعلانية للشركات من جميع الأحجام. فريق مبيعاتنا من ذوي الخبرة سوف يرشدونك للحصول على حملة إعلانية رائعة. احضر الإعلان الخاص بك أو لدينا فريق الإنتاج يقدم شيئاً في واحدة من 68 من اللغات لدينا. ما الذي تنتظره؟ ابدأ المحادثة مع زبائنك الجدد اليوم. إيميل sales@sbs.com.au.
أنتم برفقة SBS عربي 24. اكتشفوا المزيد من القصص العظيمة على sbs.com.au/arabic.
بس كانت شي عمري 13 أو 14 سنة، كرهت كل شي اللي كان عرب أو إسلامي. ما كنت بدي أحكي عربي مع عائلتي علانا بالببليك، ما كنت بدي تسمع الموسيقى العربي، بس كانت بدي كون أجنبي، بس كانت بدي كون مثل كل حدا بأستراليا، كل حدا اللي كان أبيض.
محمد عواد كره اسمه ليس لمعناه ولا لنسبه، إنما لما تعرض له من أذى ومضايقات بسبب هذا الاسم. واسمه الذي كان عنوان هويته كان أيضاً السبب لتوقيفه في المطار المتكرر في وقت كان شبح الإرهاب يهيمن فيه على العالم، مما أدى لتأزم صحته النفسية.
أنا ما بحب الشرطة، إذا شفت الشرطة بكون عندي anxiety وما بحس بالأمان.
معكم مرام إسماعيل من بودكاست الهوية.
I started getting really pressed from trying to fit the image of what people wanted me to be like. I wanted to dissociate with everything related to my culture.
ونتيجة لكل التجارب التي تعرض لها محمد، دخل في أزمة اكتئاب وكان لديه رغبة بالانتحار، وعانى العديد من المشكلات النفسية، وأصبحت كتابة الشعر وسيلته للتنفيس عن الصدمات النفسية والتعبير عن ألم وضعه تحت المجهر.
I felt like no one wanted me. I felt like outside of my immediate family, outside of the home, no one wanted me around. And I think that's part of why I became depressed, and large part of it. There were other things involved, but I think my mixed identity was one of the biggest issues for me.
وبدأ الاكتئاب النفسي يسيطر على محمد شيئا فشيء في مرحلة المراهقة عندما كان يبلغ من العمر 13 أو 14 عاما، ويقول إن جزءاً كبيراً من اكتئابه كان متعلقاً بالشعور بالعزلة والعنصرية وتأثير الإسلاموفوبيا على مجريات حياته. كان محمد يرغب في الانفصال عن كل ما يتعلق بثقافته العربية وجميع الألقاب التي أطلقت على كل من ينتمي إليها أو لجزء منها.
I didn't want to speak to my dad in Arabic in public. I didn't want to make a big deal about trying to find a place to eat. You know, even as a Muslim, if you want to eat somewhere and like my friends are all going out to eat and they're going to eat somewhere and it's like, oh, let's go to this restaurant. Okay, let's go. Not halal. Okay, I'll have the veggie burger, I guess. Or I'll like, it's, there's an, even an isolation in terms of food and what we can eat and what, I didn't realize why I was becoming depressed. There were other factors personally that were happening as well, but this was one of the ones that were isolating me from reaching out.
ويقول محمد إن الشباب العربي الأسترالي وضع تحت المجهر من قبل وسائل الإعلام، الشرطة، أمن المطارات، المدرسون وحتى الإنترنت.
As like a young Arab Muslim, we are essentially put under a microscope and everyone wanted to have a closer look at us. The media, the police, airport security, school teachers, even the internet. And it extends to all the other Muslim people and Muslim women as well, like women who wear the hijab. But I think Muslim boys in particular can feel very, very targeted by Australia.
وعندما كان في 16 من عمره، تم استجوابه في مطار سيدني لعدة ساعات إلى أن فاتته الرحلة.
My mom and dad lived separately. My mom was overseas in the Middle East and I was visiting her. It was one of the scariest experiences of my life and it was one of the most eye-opening. Basically, my dad dropped me off at the airport. He wasn't a very loving dad. He just like, okay, bye, hug at the terminal and like left. And I get through, I'm enjoying my little Macca's hash browns And these two security guard officers walk up to me, very intense, and just like, "Are you Muhammad Awad?" And I was like, "Yes." And they're like, "We're gonna ask you a few questions." And I'm like pulled out from the food court in the airport. And they take me into all these weird corridors and all these weird like rooms. And they put me in one room at some point. And I get interrogated by the airport security, by some squad. There's some, I don't remember the name of them. They had some weird name, some other kind of enforcement agency. And then by federal police, they kept asking me if I was going to go off and like join ISIS, or if I was an extremist Muslim. And I think I actually dealt with it really well at the time. Like, I was making a lot of jokes. I was trying to prove to them that like I wasn't an extremist Muslim, but I shouldn't have had to do that. It was like there's an assumed guilt. I wasn't assumed innocent. I was assumed guilty. And they were immediately the whole time just trying to prove that I was guilty. And I'm sitting there just being like, I'm innocent. I'm just a guy visiting. My parents live separately. That I felt like I had to convince every single little enforcement agency one by one, because they each interrogated me separately. And I had to prove to every single one of them I wasn't a terrorist. And one of them tried to like scare me. It was just like, you know, we saw you the second you arrived. We saw all the footage. Some man dropped you off at the terminal and then he let you go. And you went to the bathroom there, and then you went to the food court, and then we grabbed you. They're like, "Who is that man?" I'm like, "It's my dad." They were like, "Oh, we're gonna take your phones and your computer, and we're gonna go through all your stuff. Are we gonna find any extremist Islamic content on there?" I was like, "No, but I think I like pirated a Game of Thrones episode. It might still be there. Sorry." So they took my stuff away. They went into a separate room. I remember they went into the other room. They took my phone, and it's like 5:30 in the morning. And I hear from the room I'm in, I hear Allahu Akbar. I hear the Fajr Adhan go off, and they like, I hear this like kerfuffle, and they run to me and they're like, "What is this? We thought you were a moderate Muslim." And I was like, "This is the Adhan. I have to pray now." And they're like, "Oh, you pray?" I said, "Yes." And like, "I thought you said you were a moderate Muslim." I said, "Why can't I be a moderate Muslim and still be able to pray?"
تجارب محمد مع الشرطة وأمن المطارات أثرت عليه منذ سن صغير لدرجة أنه يفقد تركيزه على القيادة عندما يكونون حوله.
I work in the forensic hospital now for New South Wales Health, and that's connected to Long Bay Prison. There's a correctional center, and there's a hospital for the people who are mentally unwell. They're not guilty by mental illness. And during the training days, when we were there just to do some of the training stuff, there's a little cafe, and it's in the Long Bay Correctional. And I went in with a bunch of the people I was doing training with, and I walk into the room, and because it's where the prison is, there's all these correctional officers that are there, and they're dressed in blue like a police officer. They're dressed in blue, and they wear the very similar kind of uniform. And I walk in, and there's like 45 police officers in that room. And I just sort of, or correctional officers, and I walk in, I remember I froze. I was there for 20 seconds, I had froze, and people around me were like, "Are you okay?" I said, "I can't be in this room right now." And I couldn't move either. I was just I wasn't emotionally ready to see that many police enforcers there. And here's the thing, I didn't do anything wrong. I hadn't done anything wrong. I've never committed a crime. I don't have a criminal record. There was nothing there. I was like guilty of being Arab and Muslim in that room. Even being in that room, that was so much of a stressful experience. I was like, I don't know if I can work in this place. Driving any police car I see gives me like, I feel myself like in the beginnings of an anxiety attack or a panic attack. My best experience ever with a cop was when he looked at my license. He's like, he did the little the breathalyzer test, and he's like, "Okay, you're good, you can go." And just having that experience of like no incident was my best experience. My best experience is that nothing happened, nothing good or nothing bad. And it was like, and that was like a month ago, and I was just like, maybe they're not all terrible, maybe they don't all hate me.
وفي نفس السياق يقول محمد أن الصبية الأستراليين من المسلمين يشعرون بأنهم مستهدفون بشكل خاص من خلال برامج الحكومة الأسترالية لمكافحة التطرف مثل برنامج CVE.
If you want to deal with the issues that the Muslim community has, because we have issues, all the communities have issues, I think in place of a CVE, what I want is some kind of mental health service dedicated to the Muslim community or Arab communities or the minorities that exist in Australia. Instead of trying to create a system that where it scares the Muslim community and paints us as the problem immediately. Why can't we put that funding to something that is providing mental health support, that's providing peer supports and groups and programs to help kids manage their feelings and manage their experiences and their trauma and their mental illness? Because so many times when there is a terrorist, let's say, that they have on the news, when they have any kind of kid who's committed some sort of big, intense crime, anytime they have anything like that, there's always something else underlying it. There's always a background, a trauma, a history, a mental illness, something underlying that. A mental illness does not equate violence. Does not do that. 100% not the case. But I think when you're combining that with a lot of other factors, with someone who is unwell, who's feeling disenfranchised, who has trauma, who is looking for some sense of community, like, you're going to push our boys, you're going to push these kids away from like the Australian society that as we have it now. You're going to push these kids away from a safety net.
وشهدت حالته النفسية أسوأ تدهور لها عندما كان يبلغ 16 من عمره.
The suicidal thoughts came from a place of you as a person are a problem. You as a person don't mesh well with this society. You as a person, you're not worthy. You don't deserve love. You don't deserve peace. You don't deserve the ability to walk down a street. Like, you don't deserve that. You don't deserve to walk down the street and not be harassed.
وساهم تلقيه الكثير من العلاج النفسي وتأليفه للقصص القصيرة والأغاني وخاصة كتابة الشعر في إيجاد هويته. ويقول محمد إن كتابة الشعر منحته الشعور بالراحة والوسيلة للتعبير عن نفسه في منصة مقبولة ثقافياً.
I think I had a teacher who looked at me and was just like, "Do you want to see a counselor?" And I was like, "Why? Why?" He's just like, "I think you should see a counselor." I went to a counselor, and I think it was a really big step for me. And being able to address things in sort of a safe space. School at 15, 16 became too much as well. When you're just stressed because of normal HSC stuff and stuff like that, I was able to go somewhere during school to just take a break and speak to someone about it. And then outside of that, I was going to therapy outside of school. I was speaking to my friends about it. I was speaking to family about it. And then the way that I have kept myself sane is poetry. Like, I always say this, but like, poetry is the greatest art form in the world because it's free. The best part about poetry is like, you just need a pen and a paper, and or at the very least you just need your mind or your voice. And it always comes naturally, and I had been doing it since like the age of 11, and it gave me this sense of release.
وبعد مروره بأزمة الصحة النفسية يعتقد محمد أن المجتمعات العربية ينقصها الكثير من الدعم والتعليم في هذا المجال، ولهذا أخذ على عاتقه تقديم المساعدة لكل من يحتاجها.
Like, as a kid, I wished I had this network. I wish I had this service that I want to create. I wish it existed beforehand. And seeing so many kids and so many youth who needed it, who had all these mental health issues, who couldn't identify it, I want to set up this mental health service for like Muslim people, Arab people, minorities. I want to set something up in Western Sydney one day. I think it was a bit me trying to figure out my own mental health and then me wanting to help other people. And I think it gave me this purpose to live. It gave me this thing of like, when I was telling myself I wasn't worth being alive, or I wasn't going to do anything and the world hated me. I said, okay, let's say the world hates me for now, that's fine. There are people who do love me or who can love me, and I can help spread love and spread help and spread support. And I think that's what sort of helped me as an adult. I think a lot of people my age in their 20s don't know what they're doing, and they're a bit lost, and they're like, I just did this degree because I got into it and now I'm here. And I think I've been very focused, I think, in a lot of what I want and where I want to be at, because I have like this mission.
يمكن للمستمعين الذين يسعون للحصول على الدعم والمعلومات حول منع الانتحار الاتصال بخط لايفلاين على رقم 131114 أو على رقم 1300-659-467. شكراً لاستماعكم. كنت معكم مرام إسماعيل من بودكاست الهوية، وفي الحلقة القادمة نتحدث إلى سارة السيد.
That's how I handled it, because I didn't have anyone to stand in and say, hey, that's not cool, or, no, stop that. Like, it would have been really, really helpful to have someone like stand up for you in those situations.
أنتم مع SBS عربي 24. احصلوا على مزيد من القصص الرائعة باللغة العربية على موقعنا sbs.com.au/arabic.
استمعوا الآن إلى الموسم الثاني من بودكاست أستراليا بالعربي، أحدث إصدارات SBS عربي 24، يأخذكم في رحلة استقرار بعض المهاجرين العرب ويشارككم بأبرز الصدمات الثقافية التي تواجههم عند وصولهم إلى أستراليا.